Good afternoon, everybody. Please continue to enjoy your lunch. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and I just want to thank you all on behalf of the City Club of Chicago and our Board of Governors. Welcome back to many of you. It's a great group here. We'll go through a few of folks that are in the room so that we have a good understanding of who we're talking with and eating alongside and maybe innovating with in the future. So certainly want to thank our sponsors as always, because we can't do this without them. So Clayco is here. Thank you, Emily, and your whole team at Clayco. EY, Tim, your crew over there, the Illinois Institute of Technology, doing so much in the city. So thank you three for helping to sponsor today's event. And of course, our partnership with the Chicago Innovation, which we'll get to in just a minute. And we all know, I think we know of Chicago's strong history in innovation. We know about the river. We know about the zipper. We know about so many things, and I think what we want to do today is take that history and move that forward. And you're going to hear from four amazing panelists that Luke is going to introduce a little bit further. But Gary Cooper is here from Rhapsody, Chris Gladwin from CleverSafe, Amanda Lannard from Jellyvision, and Marianne Markowitz from First Women's Bank. They, I think, are going to show you, if you don't know already, that they are living proof that Chicago is the innovation hub and the place to be, and it is possible to take your idea, take your technology, take your innovation, and move it forward in this great ecosystem that is Chicago. So looking forward to hearing from all of them and perhaps getting a couple questions in afterwards. Before we do that, we do have a few other folks that that I also want to recognize. Michael Atkinson from Brookfield Zoo is here, a City Club speaker, who is welcoming 60 dinosaurs to, it's kind of a historic innovation, I would say, maybe, welcoming 60 dinosaurs to Brookfield Zoo for the summer. So hope you all go out and visit them. I mentioned Emily. Holly Gerard from Fun Day is here, our favorite shoe designer. David Reifman is on his way. I always forget on Wednesdays in the summer, and you know it's summer in Chicago when the bridge lifts happen. So we always delay a couple minutes here when everybody's coming in from the bridge lifts. Katya Lukanova from University of Chicago. I know Loyola is here also. Andy Zopp is here, wears so many hats with regards to innovation, government, you name it. She's a great civic leader, as is Ajay Shah. Thank you all for being here. Trent Blythe is here from Sundown Enterprises, Sunshine Enterprises. There's so much good in this room, and I hope you're all connecting with each other and continue the conversation after the panel, hopefully not during. But please, keep coming back to City Club. As I said, this is about the future of what can be done in our great city, the opportunities, the resources that are here, and connecting people and talent, connecting universities with companies, connecting research with real world applications, and certainly the talent and the opportunity that we all know is in our great city. We've got universities here. We've got a great workforce, culture, livability, technology. Of course, quantum is coming. We all know, Clayco's been involved with that. There's so much going on in Chicago and such a great future. So looking forward to that future. I also want to mention that it's 25 years now that the Chicago Innovation has been in existence. And that's 25 years of awards, of recognizing and elevating and amplifying incredible people in all these different sectors. It's 25 years of working with government and making sure that there's innovation in government in all of the sectors that I just mentioned. And they've done an incredible job. I remember 25 years ago when Tom and Dan first came into Mayor Daley's office and said, can we do some awards in the mayor's office to award some up-and-comers that were innovating? And the mayor said yes, and you probably have a better story about it. It turned into exponential growth from that year forward, from 5 to 25 to 50. And now your events are incredible. You do such an amazing job. So great for the city. So thank you, Tom Kaczmarski and Luke Tannen, who are running the Chicago Innovation and who have created this incredible organization that we're going to hear more about today. And we're going to hear about that a little bit from Luke. I'm going to ask our panelists to come up alongside Luke, and then Luke, unless you want to give, you're going to give an intro, right, Luke? All right, come on up. Please join me in welcoming back to the City Club the CEO of Chicago Innovation. He's also an author, two books that you'll have to pick up. Please welcome back to City Club Luke Tannen.
Thank you. I'll get a little step there. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dan. I remember fondly our days of working with you and Mayor Daley. You guys were early boosters, Tom, you'll recall, of Chicago Innovation back in the day. So it's great to be here with the City Club of Chicago. We share a lot of things in common, in particular, most importantly, a desire to help Chicago reach its greatest potential. For us, it's through a focus on innovation. And as Dan mentioned, this is our 25th anniversary. And in this special milestone year, we're looking back and looking forward. We're looking back at all the ways that Chicago's innovators have really impacted the world over the past quarter century, and I contend that these four panelists are excellent examples of that. But then also looking forward by laying the groundwork, hopefully with all of you in the audience and all the influence that you have, to really ensure that Chicago remains and grows as a hub of innovation for decades to come. So there's a variety of ways that we do this. One is through the Chicago Innovation Awards. And, you know, that got started 25 years ago. And let me tell you why Tom and Dan began it. So Tom, again, is where's Waldo him in the crowd? He's got the red glasses. I never miss him. But him and Dan started this because they were tired of Silicon Valley getting all the glory when it came to innovation. So they wanted to shine a spotlight on Chicago, but shine a spotlight on innovation in all of its forms, from big companies to startups, for-profits, nonprofits, across all industries, high-tech, low-tech, no-tech, and yes, government too. I know there's some government people here as well, and government innovates a lot as well. So the key things to know is that, first of all, this year's Chicago Innovation Awards, nominations are open currently. The deadline is July 31st. So if you know any new products or services, be sure to nominate. But I also just want to highlight for a second the impact of the past winners. 442 organizations have won the Chicago Innovation Awards. 98% are still in business. 75 have been acquired. I've got a question for the room. What do you think is the total exit value now of those 75 winners that have been acquired? Any guesses? Billions, a little more specific of a guess. But Darcy is in the right numerical metric, I guess. $7 billion, okay. So it's more than that. I'll take one other guess. 20, okay. It's $159 billion. So it's just amazing, the impact. It's why we've been making a fuss about innovators all these years. Besides that, we do monthly events that anyone can participate and attend. Those interested in building relationships with other innovators in Chicago, we hope to see you there. We have three mentoring programs. It all sprouts from our Innovation is for Everyone vision. We really believe in the power of mentorship. We're actually trying to scale mentorship in Chicago. We've had 2,000 different people participate in one-on-one mentoring relationships. Our women's mentoring co-op to support women, the ladder to support Black and Latina innovators and ageless innovators, and intergenerational co-mentoring program. We support kids. The Illinois Student Invention Convention is teaching innovation to K through 8th grade students. We've had 14 kids get patents on their inventions. It started with, thank you, Darcy. It started with two pilot classrooms. We've had 41,000 kids go through that innovation curriculum and competition. We have a climate innovators program. And then lastly, Chicago Innovation Fellows is a new program we started. It's an innovation-focused leadership development program that we do with the Kellogg School of Management. And it's all aimed at helping high-potential leaders drive more innovation at their organizations. So a whole bunch of different stuff that we do. But what I'm most excited about today is actually the four panelists who I am now going to introduce. There are four Chicago Innovation Award winners. So I'm going to move from standing to sitting at this press conference table that we have over here as I introduce each one. And as I call your name, feel free to come up to the stage. So.
Can everyone hear me okay? Oh, this is a different kind of microphone. All right, here we go. First, I want to introduce Chris Gladwin. He's the CEO of Ocient. A round of applause for Chris as he makes his way up. Chris is a serial tech entrepreneur. And what I mean by that is he doesn't stop after one thing. He keeps going. I met Chris when he was at CleverSafe, which he sold for $1.3 billion to IBM. Chris also was the founding CEO of MusicNow, which, fun fact, provided the first digital music service in the country. He also is the co-founder of The Forge, which is a 300-acre adventure park that Chris was just working out at this morning. And then also he started P33, which is really relevant to today's conversation. It is such a driving force of Chicago's technology leadership, and we're going to get into more of that in a little bit. And then along the way, Chris has amassed 280 patents. Is that the correct number? The most up-to-date number?
Like
300 patents. And I don't know how you've done all this stuff. I'm guessing one of those patents is a pill you don't need to sleep. That'd be my assumption. So welcome, Chris. Next up, Amanda Lannert. Give it up for Amanda. She is the CEO of Jellyvision. She's an amazing values-based leader in Chicago. Jellyvision, she transformed it from an entertainment-focused company into a real leader in the HR and benefits technology space. She's a great mentor, investor, board member, champion of Chicago's technology ecosystem. I really admire her focus on people, and no surprise, her company's won many Best Places to Work awards because of the great culture that she's inspired. And then a fun fact is that, according to LinkedIn, she seems to be a pretty avid poker player these days, which is also a perfect segue to the next person I'm going to introduce, because Amanda plays a lot of poker with Gary. Gary Cooper, come on up. Gary is the CEO of Reaply. Who wins more, by the way, you or Gary? Gary does?
He's a shark.
He's a shark. So Gary is a man of many talents, not just poker. He's a business leader. Reaply is a great climate tech company that's really a pioneer in the circular economy space. He's an investor. He founded Long Jump, which is the most active pre-seed venture fund in Chicago. Gary's also
in Illinois.
He's also a teacher. He is the entrepreneur in residence at my alma mater, Northwestern, the Kellogg School of Management, teaching students how to start companies. And then lastly, Gary is also a scientist. He's a PhD neuroscientist, to be exact, who has a patent in Parkinson's research. So,
it's Dr. Gary.
Dr. Gary, absolutely. So Gary does a little bit of everything, too. And then lastly, Marianne Markowitz. Round of applause for Marianne. She is the CEO of First Women's Bank, and I just love First Women's Bank. I can't stop talking about it with people. And it's this is why I think it's so important for Chicago. It is the only bank, and she started it here in the city, ever formed to strategically serve the women's economy and close the gender lending gap. And she's also a longtime civic leader. She was the acting administrator for the SBA, worked with Mayor Rahm Emanuel on small business activity. She was also the CFO for the 2008 Obama presidential campaign, and then was part of his presidential cabinet after you were clearly successful in that campaign. And also has been a longtime sponsor of Chicago Innovation's Women's Mentoring Co-op. So I'm so thrilled and grateful to have you four here all together. Let's dive into it. I've got some innovation and Chicago-focused questions, but I thought I'd start with a fun one. We're here to talk about innovation. What's your favorite innovation of all time? And maybe we'll just go down the line. We'll start with you, Marianne. Oh, we'll go this way.
Mine's going to be a little obvious. I mean, in my 35-plus year career, I've had the opportunity of having the before and after experience for a lot of huge innovations, right? I remember going from a 10 key with a tape to spreadsheets. But AI by far is just the most disruptive, most exciting, scariest, but most incredible innovation that I've experienced.
Yep. Okay. How about you, Gary?
So I thought this was supposed to be like my favorite innovation in Chicago.
You can take it either way.
And I thought that that might lose me fans. So I'm going to go outside Chicago. So my favorite innovation would be sequencing the human genome.
Okay.
That was done by a group led by Francis Collins, who is the NIH director for, I think, four different presidents. It's how we have vaccines. It's how we solve problems. So human genome sequencing.
Yeah, good answer.
And I like stuff that works so well, you instantly take it for granted and it becomes obvious. So my favorite innovations are things like indoor plumbing and anesthesia.
That's good.
All right. Well, I got to go with CleverSafe because, yeah, it was, you know, it's because I did it. And but I had gone like 30 years of like starting companies and making innovations. And I'd had so many near big misses. Like I was just so close to like something giant. And then CleverSafe was the first one. I was 51 years old, you know, and that was like after a long journey. So anyway, yeah, for sure that would be CleverSafe.
Yeah, when you've got the microphone, you can plug and rep anything you want. But actually, it's a good answer, and it's a perfect segue to what I wanted to talk about next, which is the thing that connects all of you together is that you've all been winners of the Chicago Innovation Awards. So if you could share a little bit more about what you won the Chicago Innovation Award for, but in particular, what was the problem that you sought out to solve? And let's start with you, Chris, and CleverSafe.
Well, okay, back to the CleverSafe thing. I mean, basically what CleverSafe did is we invented and commercialized a better way of storing data. And during the 10 years that we were there, we made large, reliable data storage about 100 times more price performant, you know, than it had been. So that was a good thing. And now everyone does it, like even though, you know, when IBM bought it, let's just say it capped its growth. Pretty much all your data is now stored using these techniques. So that's pretty satisfying.
To further brag about it for a bit, I remember when it was acquired, there was an article in Cranes that said that overnight, 81 of your employees became millionaires.
Employees and other individual investors.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
That was very satisfying.
Yep.
To do.
Yeah. Amanda, how about you?
So Jellyvision goes way back to 1989, where it was a film company, and then it became an educational software company, and then it became a gaming company that got famous for making games like You Don't Know Jack and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. But we made those games on these things called CD-ROMs that you used to put data on and slide into a computer. And then this thing came along called the internet, where data moved into the cloud. And we went from being a company that made virtual game show hosts for B2C gaming on CD-ROMs to a company that created virtual advisors in a B2B enterprise space in the cloud. And our thesis was we're going to go to where there's furrowed brow, where people are trying to do something complicated and boring but important, and we'll talk them through it. And the first award we won was for applying that idea of we'll talk you through it to helping employees pick their benefits. And the second one was for applying it to helping employees who no longer are going to be employees pick their Medicare plans. So that's our whole thing, is we try to bring human interaction online with heart and humanity and AI at the same time.
Yep, I love that. Gary?
Yes, so Reaply is a local startup that helps large organizations use the stuff they've already bought. So what happens a lot of the times is we buy a lot of things in business. When we're done using them, we put them in a storage closet or offsite, and then someone in another department buys the same thing that we're storing. So that's kind of the premise of our business. It turned out that technology would be very helpful in 2020. If you might remember, we went through this thing called COVID. And I got a call. We had 7 people in the company at the time. I got a call from the deputy mayor saying, hey, Gary, we might want to use your technology to distribute ventilators and PPE to small businesses and nonprofits, of which had to had them to safely reopen in the summer of 2020. But as you might also remember, there was runs on these things. I mean, there was literally like hotlines. The governors were putting like, if you have a ventilator, call this number. So what we did, we changed our technology in a week from working in the lab to working on the front lines, the clinical front lines, and we were able to do something like 1 million transactions of PPE from dentists who weren't using it, from veterinarians who weren't using them, to people at Rush University or to people on the clinical front lines. And so we won an innovation award for that.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that story too, because a little bit later in the conversation, we're going to talk about the importance of there being a bridge between the city of Chicago and its own entrepreneurs terms of solving problems. And also solving problems, Mary Ann, First Women's Bank is solving a big problem. So why don't you share a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So we won the award for creating First Women's Bank, which is the first new bank in the state of Illinois in what is now almost 20 years. We are a socially innovative bank. So as Luke said, we're built around a mission to grow the economy and elevate the role of women within it. At the core of this bank, we have a purpose, and the purpose is to close the gender lending gap. So we were all motivated by the data to start this bank, and the data clearly pointed to a significant gender lending gap in the small business economy. You know, we've seen women on this crusade. I mean, they've been waging an economic revolution for decades. And so as a result, women own 40% of the businesses in the small business economy. The women's economy has grown. It creates almost $3 trillion in revenue every year. It employs about 14 million people. But despite all of that growth, it's only really accessing about 5% of the dollars lent in the small business economy. So there are a lot of reasons for this, but one of the biggest observations is that women, while they start businesses at twice the rate of the overall economy, once they're established, they tend to grow them more slowly. They lean into organic growth more than their counterparts, and they don't tend to finance their growth. So in sort of learning this, we saw an opportunity to launch a bank that would strategically focus, not exclusively, but strategically focus on the women's economy. So we set out to do that. We raised the capital. We raised nearly $40 million, mostly in Chicago. It's a great place for innovators. And we launched about 5 years ago. But as we were planning, we knew that we couldn't do this all alone. We could make a lot of impact as a group, but we could make more impact with partners. So we reached out and created partnerships. We have large banks and financial institutions that invested in our capital raise, including Fidelity and Bank of America. After we launched, we recruited local banks. Many of the local banks in the Chicagoland area keep deposits to allow us to make impact. And then beyond that, and one of the things I'm most proud of, we created an impact deposit partnership program, and we've recruited almost 25 large global corporations who form deep partnerships with this bank, but it starts with deposits, and through this partnership, these global corporations can show their support for women. And we have corporations, some of the most, the most highly regarded corporations in the world, like Microsoft, Salesforce, but of the nearly 25 corporate partners we have, most of them are from Chicago. We have, Chicago has led the way in this. Aon was the first corporation to support us, Ariel Financial, Mesereau, William Belair, United Airlines. The list is very long. And then we also had foundations come out to support us with Western Golf Association, Evans Scholarship, and Obama Foundation, Good Chaos. The list is quite long. We're really grateful for all of that support. I don't think there would have been a better city to launch this innovation in. And we are especially grateful for the award. I mean, that was a big moment for us and appreciate the acknowledgement.
Great. Thank you. So innovators in all different spaces, but all innovators here in Chicago. So building on that, I want to talk about the qualities of Chicago. What are the ingredients in Chicago's pasta sauce, if you will? Here we are at Maggiano's. That makes it such a great place for innovators. And maybe, Gary, why don't we start with you? Because you came to Chicago.
That's right.
And you're still here.
Yes.
So what is it that has been the attraction for you?
I mean, I think there's some things that we see every day, right? A beautiful landscape, diverse city, diverse see with his arms open. There's engagement from the business community into the civic and philanthropic. There's engagement with the academic. If I'm thinking about starting a company, cost of living, right? things that I've learned in my role at P33 is the incredible talent that's here in Chicago. I think Illinois graduates the second most computer engineers every single year. And when I think about not just the institutions, I think about the corporations that are based in Chicago. These are great places for people like me to do business with their first and second customer. So there's this whole mix of talent, opportunity, beautiful green space, kind of an engaging community with its arms wide open. It's laughable to me why more people don't choose to build businesses and stay here in Chicago. And I think there are some things that we can get into of why our headlines that keep people from exploring Chicago. But as a person who's come here 19 years ago and chose to stay against my board, against investors, the reason I stay are some of those.
Yep, that's great.
And these types of people that I get to sit next to.
Yep. Well, in terms of these types of people, I know you're all pro-Chicago. So what's your perspective on the same question? Yes, Chris, sure. Go ahead.
Well, all the businesses that we all do are really about people. It's not like, you know, we're gold miners here or something like that. All the businesses that I see folks making here in Chicago are really knowledge businesses, and it's really a function of the quality of the people. That's it, plain and simple. You know, as Gary said, we're number two for not only computer science but college graduates in general. I mean, last time I looked, it's been a while. The percentage of people in Chicago with a college degree was number one among big cities in the United States, et cetera. So you just have amazing people here. The other thing, kind of back on the cost of living things too, like it's also easier to have like a life here while working, and it does relate to cost of living. You know, if you can have, you know, a life where you get your work done and you can afford to have a house and kind of the basics and the good things in life without absolutely having to, you know, kill yourself to pay some like $8,000 a month rent for some little apartment like my sister does in California, it really makes your quality of life, you know, way, way better. But it just comes down to people, great people here.
Yeah. It seems like a no-brainer to live here when you put it in those terms. Anything to add, Amanda or Marianne?
Yeah, I don't want to be duplicative, so I'm going to steal something that Chris said to me about like why I'm bullish on Chicago, because I think in Chicago we need to talk about Chicago less and talk about our innovators and their companies more. There is a lack of fancy in this community that is both good and bad. It means we're humble, hardworking, drive after revenue, like big businesses that are boring. The problem also is that we don't self-aggrandize ever. There's no hype, and therefore we get less financing, fewer headlines, and things that can help you hire and grow and win business. So with that said, I don't want to talk about Chicago except in one really profound way, which is we are facing a global energy shortage. Data centers now account for 10% of total global energy demand, and it's growing 30% per year. But the world's ability, the entire planet's ability to produce energy grows at 2% per year max. 10% growing at 30% starts to become a really big problem really soon. But Chicago is sitting on water, wind, and land. So when you think about quantum, when you think about AI, I actually went from saying it's not Chicago, it's just the people and the culture. Wrong, it's now Chicago. Chicago is poised to be a hotbed of power, of innovation, of quantum, of AI, and smart, humble, hardworking people to pull it together over the next 30 years, unlike any city in America.
Yeah, love that. I think Amanda Lannard for mayor is going to speak here someday.
And also, it's still true. I tell young people who are like, do I want to come to Chicago? I say, stay on the coasts and share a one-bedroom, or come to Chicago and get your own two-bedroom.
Yeah, that's great. Marianne, anything to add?
That's a hard one to follow. I'll be very brief. When we were starting the bank, people were saying, well, there's a lot of banks in Chicago, which is very, very true. But as a banking center, there is a lot of banking talent. So that became really important for our bank. And when we launched this bank, we launched it during a period of real disruption. So we were able to recruit just this incredible leadership team. It's really not something you would see at a bank our size typically, and they add real power to the bank. But just to, you know, really put an exclamation point on that, you know, that was not a one-off. As this bank scales, we've been able to continue to accelerate our ability to attract talent. And we just recently added Megan Collins, who's at our table, just 2 weeks ago. And Megan is our new president of Emerging Middle Market Banking, but she's a very high-profile, extremely well-regarded banking executive, and she chose First Women's Bank to bank at. By the way, this year she's the head of the Illinois Bankers Association. So it's been an amazing place to launch a bank because of the talent, but also because it's a place that people care about social innovation. It's one of the reasons that we raised the most capital that any bank has ever raised as a new bank in the state of Illinois. So
that's great. Well, as we're thinking about Chicago and thinking about Chicago's future, you know, it's important to know where you're going. To know where you're going, you need to know where you've been. And so let's talk about sort of the trajectory of being an entrepreneur in Chicago. And so I'm looking at, in particular, Amanda, you and Chris, because you've been at this for a while now. You have a lot of experience being an entrepreneur. Three decades, in fact. So thinking about, you know, being an entrepreneur, 3 decades ago compared to now, what's the difference between then and now, would you say?
There's so much more ecosystem, so much more infrastructure, so much more awareness, and so much more camaraderie, both to give and to get. Yeah, sure, we still have fundraising problems, but so does everyone on the planet right now. It's tough out there. But, you know, 25 years ago when I started at Jellyvision, I didn't have people I could call and say, is technology making you crazy too? What do you do? And now they're just tribes. And one of the best characteristics of the tribes of innovators in Chicago is that they genuinely root for you. Nobody is raiding somebody else's company to steal all their talent. Nobody's trying to block somebody from getting financing, because anyone's win is still everyone's win, and people will have your back. And so it just, you can point to scores of companies being graduated by Techstars, and they become great leaders, student leaders, and philanthropists, if you will, of other innovators in Chicago. And you can just call anyone. I was sitting next to this guy at the Momentum Awards the night it was announced he'd sold his company for over $1 billion. And I said, hey, will you tell me the story? What are the lessons to be learned about how you managed to do that? And he said, sure. First, I have to save the turtles, and then I'll come tell you about how I sold my company for over $1 billion. And he did just that. He went to save turtles on an island, and then he came back and he sat down and he told me 106 no's at the round, his Series D. 107 financed him. Like, the path is not easy, and getting that, he was so generous with his perspective. It's very Chicago. It's very Chicago.
I like that my claim to fame is like my ability to tolerate failure. I mean, I'm not kidding. That really is what I'm really good at, as evidenced by the current round I'm raising at OSEA. For putting together, it's going to be phenomenal. But, you know, one of the things that, like, you have to learn as an entrepreneur is to tolerate failure and to live in reality that has challenges. What was your question?
So now 30 years ago, now versus then.
Now versus then.
How is things
different? The big difference I experience is, because I'm even older than Amanda, is, you know, if I go back to the 80s, you know, when I was first doing this, the big difference is the scale at which technology and the kinds of businesses that we can all create, the scale at which they operate is like literally 1,000 times bigger. I mean, the market was so small for computing in general coming into people's lives, you know, tech, which has been my world. Now, like, I mean, the current generations of companies that hit it, they're worth trillions of dollars, like trillions of dollars, just the scale. And they're not worth that. They're worth that because their markets are that big and their earnings are that big. The scale at which technology is, you know, affects the world, and if you succeed, how big it can go, it's just unimaginably large compared to how it used to be. It's a big change.
Yeah, that's great. And Chris, I love your perspective on failure too, and I've always believed that success is defined by how well you struggle. And all four of you know it's not been a line like this in your lives. It's been a wiggly up and down, left and right, and it's being able to handle those troughs is what differentiates, I think, some people who are successful or not. So Chris, there's something that you started. I still remember maybe 8 or 9 years ago, you took me out for breakfast at Toast in Lincoln Park, and you said, I've got an idea. I don't think it was called P33 yet, but it was this vision that you've brought to life with the support of Penny Pritzker and the Commercial Club and people like Amanda and Gary and so many, Brad Henderson and other amazing leaders. Can you say a little bit about, you know, what inspired you to start P33, what it's doing, where it's going, and in particular, how people in this room can get connected to it?
Yeah, so P33, I mean, it's kind of like, I think what we've all learned in business is that what it really, if you want to do something at scale with your business, it's not like you just sitting there and doing all the work. What you're really doing is you're identifying opportunities and needs and getting the people involved with the talent that can help, you know, do that. And that's what, you know, the idea of P33 to begin with was, you know, Chicago has been, has it still is, we're not done yet, but we underperform, you know, relative to all the assets that we have in terms of people and water and power and history and business and everything and capital. And technology generally is kind of becoming the core value in all businesses. And so for Chicago to continue to be a economic leader, which enables us to be a civic leader and all the other things, we have to be a leader in tech. And it can't just be these tech companies over here kind of doing their weird thing. It's got to be everybody's got to be a leader in tech if you're selling insurance or logistics or whatever. So that was the idea. And the Chicago business community, civic community, academic community, the people, everyone's gotten really involved. So what it really means then is, all right, if we need to be a leader, we can't be a leader in everything. We have to pick an area where we have a right to win to get started. And success means that we have to amass like enough activity, people and capital and companies and innovation to be doing that as much as anyone else. We don't have to have 100%, but we got to be a leader. And so we've done that in quantum. And it, you know, that's, you know, a lot of people worked on it and off it goes. And hopefully that quantum stuff really does work in the, you know, next few years so that it becomes this giant industry. But we're in a great place with quantum. So now we're starting to work on kind of phase two, and I'm talking a lot with folks like Amanda and Gary about what that means. And so we'll be talking more about like the phase two of P33. But anyways, the whole idea is to transform this region into a true leader. And we've kind of got that started with quantum. Still a lot of work left to do.
Yep, that's great. Well, and building on that, you know, for Chicago to be the world leader, economic leader, civic leader, both today and in the future, what's one thing that you think Chicago really needs to get right? So you've talked about quantum and technology leadership. Amanda, if you were to say we all should channel our efforts towards achieving this, what comes to mind for you?
So achieving this by growth and innovation, I was thinking about this room, and it's really easy to say stuff like everyone should angel invest. But not everyone has the attitude towards risk or the ability to angel invest, and not everybody can quit their job and go start a company. So if we really want to all be a part of creating an ecosystem, I would say there are three things that everyone in this room can control and contribute to. The first is constantly be someone's first big break. Whether that means hiring someone into a stretch role, promoting somebody before they're ready, or giving a vendor who doesn't quite meet the bar of procurement standards a contract, you can be the constant source of first big breaks. The second, and in Chicago, I say this, I'm from the South, so I'm a transplant here, met and married a Chicago guy, I'm never getting out. The second thing is just genuinely in life, have more audacious dreams. Mm-hmm. Having audacious dreams doesn't mean you're going to fulfill them, but having met a lot of really, really successful people, they all have some DNA in them that like says go bigger. So don't go nice, go big. And the third thing is brag about someone beside yourself. Be a little bit of a hype machine that we are lacking in Chicago. So I was just looking around the room. Sitting at this table over here is Raj Ishambadi. He invented the EMBA, which was one of the most successful post-grad innovations. He put Northeastern University on the map. He's now the head of Illinois Tech, and he's sitting at a table with half of the power couple duo that is doing more for life sciences and biosciences, Stephen Collins of Matter, than Chicago has ever seen. And they're just like, that's just the first table. What they won't do is introduce themselves like that. So be the person who will. because the talent's here. They just need a little bit more hype, a little bit more swag, and everyone in the room can be the swag for somebody else.
Yep. And if you don't like bragging about yourself, nominate for the Chicago Innovation Awards, and we will brag for you. I promise. Gary and Marianne, what's your take on, you know, one thing Chicago should try to get right and focus on?
I mean, I think it sort of has it. I think it needs more of it. And Chris gave a great example with P33, but it's strategic leadership that really drives and forces civic engagement. So P33 is a great example of an organization that does that. I serve on the board of World Business Chicago and Illinois EDC. And so I get the privilege of witnessing their work, and they do a lot of that. They have these huge boards of CEOs from some of the largest corporations. So some of the best, most powerful talent in the city comes together on a regular basis and works on solving civic issues and reinvesting in the city. And, you know, I've been able to watch EDC successfully raise the profile of the state of Illinois, bring in new investment and bring in new corporations and jobs, while at the same time working with P33 to, you know, make this moonshot for quantum. And it's remarkable to watch. And World Business Chicago, you know, while they're doing a lot of the same work to bring in jobs, et cetera, and really leveraging the CEOs in the city to do that, they've taken their time to create a really thoughtful strategic plan in the 2050 plan for economic growth and jobs. So we have it. We need more of it. I think it's a huge differentiator for this city. I mean, we are a national bank, so I'm in a lot of cities. but the level of civic engagement that Chicago has is a differentiator. We just need to keep it up.
I love both these answers. You know, I'm reading a book right now by a former U.S. Senator, Ben Sasse, who unfortunately is stricken with pancreatic cancer. And basically the last sentence of the intro is, if you want to be happy, plant roots and tend them. So my advice would be for people to tend their city. As I walked here, I'm in the waste industry, I saw a few empty bottles in the street. I picked them up and I put them in the trash. There are lots of startups and young entrepreneurs, as Amanda was saying, who's looking to sell their first contract or their second, or to get that first check, tend them. So I'd say if we all want to be happy in this city, we planted roots and we have to tend them a little bit more.
Yeah, that's great. And building on that, but shifting gears a little bit too, you know, let's talk about maybe what prevents Chicago from being, you know, 10 times the powerhouse as an innovator. And specifically, you know, in terms of tending to the city, it means tending to everyone in the city. And so this topic of inclusion, I think, is really at the heart also of innovation, because innovation exists when diversity of thought is at the table. And if we're trying to grow the pie, the pizza pie, it's my second Maggiano's thing so far. If we're trying to grow this pizza pie of Chicago, you know, we want everyone to be a part of being able to have a slice. And so, you know, maybe starting with you, Marianne, this topic of inclusion in the bank, you know, that they go hand in hand, but it'd be great to get all of your takes. I know you're focused on this from a workforce development standpoint in many ways. You know, how does inclusion fit into this topic of Chicago getting to where we all desire to be as an innovation center?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Chicago can be and is a great place for innovation for certain projects. And it certainly was for us. We were able to tap into this overlapping network of, you know, peer leadership, CEO networks like, you know, the Economic Club, YPO, just many, there's many, many overlapping organizations. And if you can tap into one or two of them, because they're overlapping, you can cross-pollinate into all of them. And there's a deep well of resources available through the people that are members of that. And it was amazing for us. But we launched this bank. We were all senior executives at whatever we were doing before. And so we had well-developed, robust networks, and we were able to tap into that. It's not available to everybody. So finding ways to democratize access to resources is what it's all about. I think that's how we elevate the city as a home for innovators. And we do that by creating bridges and roadmaps. And I think it's exactly what Chicago Innovation does. You do, Luke, an incredible job of bringing together people that need to meet each other so that somebody can get to the next level. We need more of it. I think that Leadership Greater Chicago does a different version of this, where they create a roadmap for young leaders to really learn about, you know, all the assets of the city and all the great things that they can tap into and support, but also derive support from. We need more bridges and roadmaps, I would say. But I think if we can democratize the resource, because Chris made the point that there's so much underutilized here that we could, you know, leverage, and we would be, I think, the number one city for innovation if we could figure it out.
Yep. And we have all the ingredients to really be the world leader in inclusive innovation. I mean, by definition, we have the most diversified economy. No single industry employs more than 13% of the workforce. And people from all over the world come here to Chicago. It was a city built by immigrants. So from its get-go, it was very diverse. Gary, how can we make, you know, Chicago's innovation ecosystem even more diverse than it is today?
I mean, I think about accessibility. And so when we started Long Jump in reaction, so five founders post George Floyd, we got together. We're all running companies. We said, you know, what can we do from the small, you know, podium that we have to make the road to where we've gotten to easier for people who are looking up? And so we got together, we raised $5 million, and we started this thing called Long Jump. Long Jump is a first check fund for any entrepreneur in Chicagoland. We are now the most active pre-seed investor in the state of Illinois. One important thing when you're getting into venture is this concept of a warm intro. So if my story is, I spent my whole life in a lab, first in a reproductive cancer lab at Indiana University, and then for a decade in a Parkinson's disease research lab at Northwestern. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know the Chris Gladwins or the Amanda Landers at that time. I didn't know who would know people who could fund my company and my idea. And that's a barrier from accessibility. No matter how diverse our landscape and people and economies are, there's still people who can't get in. So what we did at Long Jump is we got rid of this warm intro concept, and we made it an application. So really anyone can go apply today. We review them every quarter. We invite some people to interviews, and we cut a check within 4 weeks. And so we think about, just as one example, is to not just recognize diversity, but there are people who aren't able still to kind of get into certain economies. And, you know, our take, at least from a Long Jump perspective, is to kind of make that barrier zero, because where there's alpha is in the economies that aren't being, and the people who aren't being invested in, not the ones that are over-invested in.
Yeah, love that. So if you've got a good idea, Gary's got a checkbook, and he knows others who have those as well. Amanda, you've been a rock star for women in tech in particular, but all kinds of diverse entrepreneurs. You know, how do you channel your energies towards that cause and goal?
I think I've been one of the most mentored people in Chicago tech. People always talk about, no, it's men are hard, right? I'm like, yeah, they're hard. They're behind me, pushing me forward. That's kind of what I inherited. And so I just felt that it was I was given a seat at the table with the expectation that I would pull a second up beside me. And it is, I also am someone, not to be overly personal, but Jelly Vision's going to create 30 CEOs before I'm dead, meaning people I work with will go on and become CEOs. We already have four, there'll be 30, and my kids are going to be better than I am. So I just have kind of the mindset of, like, legacy isn't what I do, it's in those around me what they do.
Yeah. And I was reading a LinkedIn post by Amanda the other day. You were talking about, I think, your daughter at Anthropic, and how the things that she knows and is learning at such a young age that, like, future generations, they're good. You know, it's not about the corporate ladder. I think I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but it's really about having the right kinds of skills and knowing how to employ them and how to use them. In this case, you know, AI being a great way to democratize who can be successful.
Yeah, so, like, breaking that down from a tech perspective, like, there's a sentence that is true, and if you think about it, it's absolutely terrifying, but software is no longer a moat. That's craziness! And that's true. So I made a human in my body who now works at Anthropic, and she's on Mythos, the large language model the U.S. government won't let them distribute. And the pace of change is going to be so fast and so dramatic. And what mere mortals are going to be able to do in terms of generating code, I love it when people are like, 2050. I'm like, I don't know, 90 days from now. Based on the pace of innovation. So I think know your values, know your compass, be kind to people, and stay on your toes because it's not going to get any slower.
Yeah. Well, let's keep talking about the next generation for a moment. So, you know, the future of Chicago's innovation ecosystem, a lot of those leaders are in our schools today. They're high school students, they're college students, they're new people in their 20s who've just graduated. They're coming here to Chicago. And to your point, you've been so mentored, and we all have in so many kinds of ways. But the four of you are also obviously in a position now where you can do so much in terms of giving back, paying it forward, investing in others. How do you think about that in Chicago, whether it's mentorship or capital or partners, or and what drives you? Is it you know, a sense of responsibility? Is there a capitalism quality? It's investing. Is it just a desire to teach? You know, what drives you to do that, and what does paying it forward look like for each of you? Why don't we start with you, Chris?
I think the thing that you know, we all have really infinite options for what we would want to do to make a contribution, you know, do something impactful, doing something positive. What I found is most people, myself included, you really want to select ones where you really can have a significant and lasting impact. It's very easy to, you know, do something that's, you know, nice, but then a year later, like, it's over. So think, you know, trying to figure out something that you can kind of really systemically change things in a way that, you know, lasts and, you know, has a big impact. I mean, that for me, that's really was my motivation for doing P33. I had a lot of currency, and then I had started a true core software technology company here. And, you know, that there had been kind of a resistance. You know, Amanda talks a lot about this, like Chicago people just didn't. Not only did Silicon Valley people think, but Chicago people thought, well, you can't really make core computing technology here. But we proved that you could. And so that gave me some currency to kind of go to the community and say, look, we can actually do this. And, you know, all the benefits and stuff. And so for me, that was just a way of I felt like I could have a lot more impact doing something like that as opposed to like writing somebody a check, you know, and so that for me, it was like something that was really sustainable and something that would really have impact is kind of what directs me as to what, you know, what I should focus on.
Yeah, it almost sounds like improving those West Coast people wrong maybe was somewhere deep down in there or
a little bit. I mean, yeah. I don't begrudge that, you know, Silicon Valley. I've been a part of it, you know. It's more of, you know, I am from the Midwest. I grew up here. I grew up in Ohio. I've been here since 1991 in Chicago. It's just, you know, these are my people. These are my mm-hmm. friends. You know, like, yeah. This is us. And so, you know, we shouldn't let them have all the fun.
Yeah.
It's not that I begrudge them. It's like, yeah. You know, we want to do that too.
Yep, that's great. Amanda or Gary, what drives you?
Last one.
Well, I've said 1,000 times that I want my story to be unremarkable. I think that if I could make that happen, that would be a great achievement. Meaning that me and Chris are actually from the same town, you know, young black boy to a single mother from Dayton, Ohio, goes to Chicago, becomes his first family, first homeowner in his family, first business owner in his family, second doctor, and does that from a technical background, lurching over into business. And I think the world right now deserves more what I call sciencepreneurs, more nerds, more people who didn't do the MBA, who scurried away from accounting. The world's problems now are physical, and they deserve engineers and scientists to lead those ventures. And what I've been doing in my little small universe of Long Jump is investing in supporting those entrepreneurs as best I can. And so if I can see more Garys who go from the lab to the boardroom, who start whatever in their heart's mind, that would be a great thing for me to have enabled.
I love that. Well, I'm going to do one last rapid-fire quick question down the line, and then I'm going to turn it back to you, Dan, because I think we're going to do a little bit of audience Q&A. Yep. So in one statement, this is the City Club. There's a lot of influential people in the room, business leaders, civic leaders, tech leaders, all kinds of folks. What's one call to action that you have for this room to help Chicago become a greater hub of innovation?
Oh, We're starting here?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, then I won't make my normal ask, which is please bank with First Women's Bank. But I would say, you know, back to the thing that Chicago needs to continue to differentiate. It is, you know, whatever you're doing civically, take a look at it, double down on it. I think that is the true differentiator for this city that, you know, sets it apart. So get more involved.
I had a whole page, literally.
Pretend you just asked ChatGPT to make one sentence.
The sentence would be adopt a startup or two. Mm. In your former work or even in your own mind for interest, if you can help a local company, whether helping them in any way of the word help, it helps our ecosystem, it helps that startup, it helps their employees, it helps them tell their board Chicago's a great place and their investors Chicago's a great place to do business. So my call to action would be adopt a startup today.
Yeah, love that.
Be a constant giver of first big breaks.
Mm. And Chris, take us home.
I'm going to say not just embrace the change, but advance the change. You know, Amanda was talking about what's going on with like AI turning the world upside down. That's definitely happening. As we kind of start working on the next generation of P33 stuff, you know, Chicago's a $1 trillion economy. If you really want to change a $1 trillion economy, you got to do big things, lots of change. And so we're going to go through a process where we're going to engage, you know, folks and kind of say, here's what we're thinking of doing and get their feedback. And when you do that, you know, you put your ideas out there, there's a lot more risk. It's a lot harder. You know, you're vulnerable. You know, if you really want to get people's input, you got to kind of do it before everything's fully baked. So you're, you know, like, you know, it, like I said, you got to trust people to not take advantage of that. So I guess I would just say, you know, as that unfolds in the coming couple years, embrace the change and be a part of advancing the change, not just like, oh, yeah, I'm understanding what's happening with AI and the world and technology and stuff. You know, we all have to get in there and be a part of, like, figuring this out. Because when we look back in 20 years and 50 years, like, is Chicago a leader? It's going to be a function of did over the next couple decades, did we embrace all this huge change that is happening and not just embrace it, but advance it and put ourselves in a leadership position. Mm-hmm. But that means we're going to have to like take risks and do things that are difficult and things like that as a community.
Yep, that's great. Well, growth comes from being outside your comfort zone, too. So yep. That's a big part of that. Well, thank you for answering all my questions. But I believe, Dan, the audience might have some questions, too.
Hopefully, we have 2 minutes. That's working, but we do have 5 minutes or so. If anyone doesn't have any questions, please let me know. I have a couple pre-submitted also in case we have a reluctant audience. I'll give you a minute by reading one from Christopher. From Lofty Ventures, how important is angel investing in the future of Chicago? And that can, it wasn't directed to anyone in particular.
Existential. If you don't have it, that doesn't happen. How about that? Right?
Ditto.
I mean,
just to explain, angel means people who aren't institutions writing real checks into entrepreneurs who are trying to do something new and different. So it's just regular people investing in regular people before institutions will invest in them. That's what angel investing is. And it is the lifeblood of not evolutionary, but revolutionary change.
And I'll give an example real quick. Spot Hero, you might have seen, was in the news recently, acquired by Uber for $600 million. And Mark Lawrence and his team used to be a lot smaller. I know a lot of us here know him from back in the days. They were an early Chicago Innovation Award winner. And that acquisition has created a lot of wealth for a lot of different people that now they can be in positions to also pay it forward. But sorry, Gary, I think I saw you leaning in too.
It's actually the same point. It's a flywheel. One of our most significant angel investors was Mike Gamson. I don't know if people know him or not. And I remember in small short story how it happened. He took a 5-minute call with me. He always takes calls that are like less than 5 minutes. It's kind of crazy. And I pitched my company to him. And he said, send me something you've written about the company. And I sent him a Medium blog that I've written. And he called me one night. I was in a coffee shop and I hid away in the bathroom. And he just goes, I'm going to make an investment. Tell me what number I should make. And for a person for 3 years who who was beating the streets, talking to everyone, didn't know wealthy people. That literally made me cry in that bathroom stall. And I made up some number. I didn't even know what number. I said, oh, 150,000. He's like, okay. I was like, wow, I should ask for more. She was the one who gave me the courage. About 3 years ago, I called Mike Gamson randomly and I said, I want to be Mike Gamson for one entrepreneur in Chicago, and made him cry on that call. That's how important angel investing is.
Can I lean in? I just want to add that Mike Gamson also invested in the bank, and I just I knew of him. I reached out to him with a in-mail message over LinkedIn, and he took a call, and then I had to chase him a bit. But he did invest, but then beyond that, he made a really critical introduction for us to Mark Walters. People know, founded Guggenheim, owns the Dodgers. And that, to shorten the story, led to Billie Jean King being our largest investor. So he's been incredibly impactful for the bank.
Yeah, that's a great example. And there's a lot of people in Chicago who are willing to take 20-minute meetings, 15-minute conversations, 30-minute meetings. There's more of those people than I think people realize, and it leads to those kinds of outcomes.
Great. Do we have any other questions in the room? We do have one over here. If we could do it quickly, we've got about 2 minutes. And if you could introduce yourself, please.
Hi, everyone. I'm Swati Sharma from EY. Work in tech consulting, so this is like my daydream happening during the day. Great to meet you all. One question. Often when people reach out to angels, they think of them as very successful entrepreneurs. But I'm sure there are people in this room who could even invest a $5,000, $10,000, right? I recently learned a $50,000 investment that went a long way. What can we do more to match potential angels that don't know they can be angels, and then also such investors? Is there a forum here? I know in West Coast there are lots of forums like that, but somebody like a grandma who retired and is sitting with a lot of money.
Lofty Angels, Josephine Collective, Hyde Park Angels, Irish Angels, Long Jump Ventures, Techstar Chicago. They're there, and they would be so happy. Vitalize. So many groups are there to educate who is a good fit and who is not a good fit. Define what accredited investor means. Explain to you the value of a high-risk asset class in a portfolio, and then start to get you some deal flow. Chicago is great at training early stage investors, if you'll just, and some of the best ones are like anesthesiologists. People who've just had like good careers their whole lives, work for the same hospital system, have done well, and understand you're going to lose 19 out of 20, but that 20th one is going to be spot hero, and it's going to pay everything back 10 times.
And my email is garry @reply.com. I'm happy to connect you to any of those people.
There you go. That's Gary with two R's. Two R's.
That was a very City Club answer and a very Chicago answer. And I so appreciate the willingness, like you said, for everybody to step up, help each other, mentor each other, fund each other, lift each other up. What an incredible, this was a masterclass as far as I was concerned in innovation in Chicago. And I want to remind all of you that you're lucky enough to be in the room eating this incredible lunch. But so much of what we do is film this and put it out for the world to see. And we've got thousands and thousands of people that will watch this video. Encourage anyone who knows, maybe it's a student, maybe it's an entrepreneur, maybe it's somebody who's hit a couple of bumps and needs a little bit of encouragement, watch this. And hopefully they'll stay put here in Chicago and continue to just grow this ecosystem. You four and you fifth, you thank you, Luke, first of all, just for moderating this and bringing this incredible discussion together in Chicago Innovation. Thank you so much. It was awesome. The four of you, again, I go back and watch this video yourselves because you said some incredible things that so many people will be able to benefit from moving forward indefinitely. So here at City Club, we are totally committed to keeping these conversations going. I'm already working on a quantum panel, so we're going to take a couple clips and push that. We love your ideas. I would love for any of you to share those ideas. For now, we'll stop this and hope you all have a few minutes to keep talking. But welcome you back anytime. We have Superintendent Larry Snelling from the Police Department coming soon. We have the Cultural Affairs Commissioners, Kenya Merritt. We have Kwame Raoul from the Illinois Attorney General. We've got a panel on Sankofa Village. There's so much to come, and it's all because of all you bringing the sponsorship, bringing the ideas, and bringing the right people into this room to keep this ecosystem going. So thank you to our panelists. Thank you, of course, to Luke. And thanks to all of you for keeping all this going in the right direction.
And thank you, too, Dan, for creating this forum and bringing this community together. So applause for the city.
You're welcome back anytime. Enjoy the week.